as a means of revitalizing a depleted mind, it seems appropriate to call attention to the fact that all of the great leaders, in whatever walks of life they have arisen, have been and are people of highly sexed natures. The word sexed is not an indecent word. You'll find it in all the dictionaries. There is a growing tendency upon the part of the best-informed physicians and other health practitioners to accept the theory that all diseases begin when the brain of the individual is in a depleted or devitalized state. Stated in another way, it is a known fact that a person who has a perfectly vitalized brain is practically, if not entirely, immune from all manner of disease. Every intelligent health practitioner, or whatever school or type, knows that nature or the mind cures disease in every instance where a cure is effected. Medicines, faith, laying on the hands, chiropractic, osteopathy, and all other forms of outside stimulant are nothing more than artificial aids to nature, or to state it correctly, mere methods of setting the chemistry of the mind into motion to the end that it readjusts the cells and tissues of the body, revitalizes the brain, and otherwise causes the human machine to function normally. The most orthodox practitioner will admit the truth of this statement. What, then, may be the possibilities of the future development in the field of mind chemistry? Through the principle of harmonious blending of minds, perfect health may be enjoyed. Through the aid of this same principle, sufficient power may be developed to solve the problem of economic pressure which constantly pressures upon every individual. We may judge the future possibilities of mind chemistry by taking inventory of its past achievements, keeping in mind the fact that these achievements have been largely the result of accidental discovery and of chance groupings of minds. We are approaching the time when the professorate of the universities will teach mind chemistry the same as other subjects are now taught. Meanwhile, study and experimentation in connection with this subject open vistas of possibilities for the individual student. Mind chemistry and economic power. That mind chemistry may be appropriately applied to the workaday affairs of the economic and commercial world is a demonstrable fact. Through the blending of two or more minds in a spirit of perfect harmony, the principle of mind chemistry may be made to develop sufficient power to enable the individuals whose minds have been thus blended to perform seemingly superhuman feats. Power is the force with which man achieves success in any undertaking. Power in unlimited quantities may be enjoyed by any group of men or men and women who possess the wisdom with which to submerge their own personalities and their own immediate individual interests through the blending of their minds in a spirit of perfect harmony. Observe, profitability, the frequency with which the word harmony appears throughout this introduction. There can be no development of a master mind where this element of perfect harmony does not exist. The individual units of the mind will not blend with the individual units of another until the two minds have been aroused and warmed, as it were, with a spirit of perfect harmony of purpose. The moment two minds begin to take divergent roads of interest, the individual units of each mind separate, and the third element, known as a master mind, which grew out of the friendly or harmonious alliance, will disintegrate. We come now to the study of some well-known men who have accumulated great power and also great fortunes through the application of mind chemistry. Let us begin our study with three men who are known to be men of great achievement in their respective fields of economic, business, and professional endeavor. Their names are Henry Ford, Thomas Edison, and Harvey Firestone. Of the three, Henry Ford is by far the most powerful, having reference to economic and financial power. Mr. Ford is the most powerful man now living on earth. Many who have studied Mr. Ford believe him to be the most powerful man who ever lived. As far as is known, Mr. Ford is the only man now living, or who ever lived, with sufficient power to outwit the money trust of the United States. Mr. Ford gathers millions of dollars with as great ease as a child fills its bucket with sand when playing on the beach. It has been said by those who were in position to know that Mr. Ford, if he needed it, could send out the call for money and gather it in $1 billion and have it available for use within 1 week. No one who knows of Ford's achievements doubt this. Those who know him well know that he could do it without no more effort than the average man expends in raising the money with which to pay a month's house rent. He could get his money if he needed it, through the intelligent application of the principles on which this course is based. While Mr. Ford's new automobile was in the process of perfection in 1927, it is said that he received advance orders with cash payments for more than 375,000 cars. At an estimated price of $600 per car, this would amount to $225 million, which he received before a single car was delivered. Such is the power of confidence in Ford's ability. Mr. Edison, as everyone knows, is a philosopher, scientist, and inventor. He is perhaps the keenest Bible student on earth, a student of nature's Bible, however, and not of the myriads of man-made Bibles. Mr. Edison has such a keen insight into Mother Nature's Bible that he has harnessed and combined, for the good of mankind, more of nature's laws than any other person now living or who ever lived. It was he who brought together the point of a needle and the piece of revolving wax in such a way that the vibration of the human voice could be recorded and reproduced through the modern talking machine. And it may be Edison who will eventually enable man to pick up and correctly interpret the vibrations of thought which are now recorded in the boundless universe of ether, just as he enabled man to record and reproduce the spoken word. It was Edison who first harnessed the lightning and made it serve as a light for man's use, through the aid of an incandescent electric light bulb. It was Edison who gave the world the modern moving picture. These are but a few of his outstanding achievements, these modern miracles, which he has performed not by trickery under the sham pretense of superhuman power, but in the very midst of the bright light of science, transcend all of the so-called miracles described in the man-made books of fiction. Mr. Firestone is the moving spirit in the great Firestone tire industry in Akron, Ohio. His industrial achievements are so well known wherever automobiles are used that no special comment on them seems necessary. All three of these men began their careers, business and professional, without capital and with but little schooling of that type usually referred to as education. All three men are now well educated. All three are wealthy. All three are powerful. Now let us inquire into the source of their wealth and power. Thus far we have been dealing only with effect. The true philosopher wishes to understand the cause of a given effect. It is a matter of general knowledge that Mr. Ford, Mr. Edison, and Mr. Firestone are close personal friends, and have been so for many years. That in former years they were in the habit of going away to the woods once a year for a period of rest, meditation, and recuperation. But it is not generally known, it is a grave doubt if these three men themselves know that there exists between the three men a bond of harmony which has caused their minds to become blended into a mastermind, which is the real source of the power of each. This mass mind, growing out of the coordination of the individual minds of Ford, Edison, and Firestone, has enabled these men to tune in on forces and sources of knowledge with which most men are no extent familiar. If the student doubts either the principle or the effects here described, let him remember that more than half the theory here set forth is a known fact. For example, it is known that these three men have great power. It is known that they are wealthy. It is known that they began without capital and with but little schooling. It is known that they form periodic mind contacts. It is known that they are harmonious and friendly. It is known that their achievements are so outstanding as to make it impossible to compare these achievements with those of other men in their respective fields of activity. All these effects are known to practically every schoolboy in the civilized world. Therefore, there can be no dispute as far as effects are concerned. of one fact connected with the cause of achievements of Edison, Ford, and Firestone. We may be sure, namely, that these achievements were in no way based upon trickery, deceit, the supernatural, or the so-called revelations of any other form of unnatural law. These men do not possess a stock of legendarium. They work with natural laws, laws which for the most part are well known to all economists and leaders in the field of science, with the possible exception of the law upon which chemistry of the mind is based. And yet chemistry of the mind is not sufficiently developed be classified by scientific men in their catalogue of known laws. A mastermind may be created by any group of people who will coordinate their minds in a spirit of perfect harmony. The group may consist of any number from two upward. Best results appear available from the blending of six or seven minds. It has been suggested that Jesus Christ discovered how to make use of the principle of mind chemistry, and that his seemingly miraculous performance grew out of the power he developed through the blending of the minds of his 12 disciples. It has been pointed out that when one of the disciples, Judas, broke faith, the mastermind immediately disintegrated, and Jesus met with the supreme catastrophe of his life. When two or more people harmonize their minds and produce the effect known as a mastermind, each person in the group becomes vested with the power to contact with and gather knowledge through the subconscious minds of all the other members of the group. The power becomes immediately noticeable, having the effect of stimulating the mind to a higher rate of vibration, and otherwise evidencing itself in a form of a more vivid imagination and the consciousness of what appears to be a sixth sense. It is through this sixth sense that new ideas will flash into the mind. These ideas take on the nature and form of the subject, dominating the mind of the individual. In the entire group has met for the purpose of discussing a given subject, ideas concerning that subject will come pouring into the minds of all present, as if an outside influence were dictating them. The minds of these participating in the mastermind become as magnets, attracting ideas and thought stimuli on the most highly organized and practical nature from no one knows where. The process of mind blending, here described as mastermind, may be likened to the act of one who connects many electric batteries to a single transmission wire, thereby stepping up the power flowing over the line. Each battery added increases the power passing over the line by amount of energy that the battery carries. Just so in the case of blending individual minds into a mastermind. Each mind, through the principle of mind chemistry, stimulates all the other minds in the group until the mind energy thus becomes so great that it penetrates to and connects with the universal energy, known as ether, which in turn touches every atom of the entire universe. The modern radio apparatus substantiates, to a considerable extent, the theory here expounded. Powerful sending or broadcasting stations must be erected through which the vibration of sound is stepped up before it can be picked up by the much higher vibrating energy of the ether and carried in all directions. A mastermind made up of many individual minds so blended that they produce a strong vibrating energy constitutes almost an exact counterpart of the radio broadcasting station. Every public speaker has felt the influence of mind chemistry, for it is a well-known fact that as soon as the individual minds of an audience become in rapport, tuned to the rate of vibration of the mind of the speaker with the speaker, there is a noticeable increase of enthusiasm in the speaker's mind, and he often rises to heights of oratory which surprise all, including himself. The first 5 to 10 minutes of the average speech are devoted to what is known as warming up. By this is meant the process through which the minds of the speaker and his audience are becoming blended in a spirit of perfect harmony. Every speaker knows what happens when this state of perfect harmony fails to materialize upon part of his audience. The seemingly supernatural phenomena occurring in spiritualistic meetings are the result of the reaction upon one another of the minds in the group. These phenomena seldom begin to manifest themselves under 10 to 20 minutes after the group is formed, for the reason that this is about the time required for the minds in the group to become harmonized or blended. The messages received by members of a spiritualistic group probably come from one or two sources, or from both, namely, first, from the vast storehouse of the subconscious mind of some member of the group, or second, from the universal storehouse of the ether, in which it is more than probable all thought vibration is preserved. Neither any known natural law or human reason supports the theory of communication with individuals who have died. It is a known fact that any individual may explore the store of knowledge in another's mind. Through this principle of mind chemistry, and it seems reasonable to suppose that this power may be extended to include contact with whatever vibrations are available in the ether, if there are any. The theory that all the higher and more refined vibrations, such as those growing out of thought, are preserved in the ether, grows out of the known fact that neither matter nor energy, the two known elements of the universe, may be either created or destroyed. It is reasonable to suppose that all vibrations which have been stepped up sufficiently to be picked up and absorbed in the ether will go on forever. The lower vibrations, which do not blend with or otherwise contact the ether, probably live a natural life and die out. All the so-called geniuses probably gained their reputations because, by mere chance or otherwise, they formed alliances with other minds which enable them to step up their own mind vibrations to where they were enabled to contact the vast temple of knowledge recorded and filed in the ether of the universe. All of the great geniuses, as far as this author has been enabled to gather the facts, were highly sexed people. The fact that sexual contact is the greatest known mind stimulant lends color to the theory herein described. Inquiring further into the source of economic power as manifested by the achievement of men in the field of business, let us study the case of the Chicago group known as the Big Six, consisting of William Wrigley Jr., who owns the chewing gum business bearing his name, and whose individual income is said to be more than $15 million a year. J.R. Thompson, who operates a chain of lunchrooms bearing his name. Mr. Lasker, who owns the Lord and Thomas Advertising Agency. Mr. McCullough, who owns the Parmalee Express Company, the largest transfer business in America. And Mr. Ritchie and Mr. Hertz, who own the yellow taxicab business. A reliable financial reporting company has estimated the yearly income of these six men at upwards of $25 million, or on an average of more than $4 million a year per man. Analysis of the entire group of six men discloses the fact that not one of them had any special educational advantage, that all began without capital or extensive credit, that their financial achievement has been due to their own individual plans, and not to any fortunate turn of the wheel of chance. Many years ago, these six men formed a friendly alliance, meeting at stated periods for the purpose of assisting one another with ideas and suggestions in their various and sundry lines of business endeavor. With the exception of Hertz and Ritchie, none of the six men were in any manner associated in a legal partnership. These meetings were strictly for the purpose of cooperating on the give-and-take basis of assisting one another with ideas and suggestions, and occasionally by endorsing notes and other securities to assist some member of the group who had met with an emergency making such help necessary. It is said that each of the individuals belonging to this Big Six group is a millionaire many times over. As a rule, there is nothing worthy of special comment on behalf of a man who does nothing more than accumulate a few million dollars. However, there is something connected with the financial success of this particular group of men that is well worth commenting. Study, analysis, and even emulation, and that something is the fact that they have learned how to coordinate their individual minds by blending them in the spirit of cooperation and perfect harmony, thereby creating a mastermind that unlocks to each individual of the group doors which are closed to most of the human race. The United States Steel Corporation is one of the strongest and most powerful industrial organizations in the world. The idea out of which this great industrial giant grew was born in the mind of Elbert Gerry, a more or less commonplace small-town lawyer who was born and reared in a small Illinois town near Chicago. Mr. Gerry surrounded himself with a group of men whose mind he successfully blended in a spirit of perfect harmony, thereby creating the mastermind, which is the moving spirit of the great United States Steel Corporation. Search where you will, however, you find an outstanding success in business, finance, industry, or in any of the professions, you may be sure that back of the success is some individual who has applied the principle of mind chemistry, out of which a mastermind has been created. These outstanding successes often appear to be the handiwork of but one individual, but search closely and the other individuals whose minds have been coordinated with his may be found. Remember that two or more persons may operate the principle of mind chemistry so as to create a mastermind. Power, or manpower, is organized knowledge expressed through intelligent efforts. No effort can be said to be organized unless the individuals engaged in the effort coordinate their knowledge and energy in a spirit of perfect harmony. Lack of such harmonious coordination of effort is the main cause of practically every business failure. An interesting experiment was conducted by this author in collaboration with the students of a well-known college. Each student was requested to write an essay on how and why Henry Ford became wealthy. Each student was required to describe, as a part of his or own essay, what was believed to be the nature of Ford's real asset, of what these assets consisted in detail. The majority of the students gathered financial statements and inventories of the Ford assets and used these as the basis of their estimates of Ford's wealth. Included in these sources of Ford's wealth were such as cash in banks, raw and finished materials and stock, real estate and buildings, goodwill, estimated at 10 to 25% of the value of material assets. One student out of the entire group of several hundred answered as follows. Henry Ford's assets consist in the main of two items. 1. Working capital and raw and finished materials. 2. The knowledge gained from experience of Henry Ford, himself and the cooperation of a well-trained organization, which understands how to apply this knowledge to best advantage from the Ford viewpoint. It is impossible to estimate, with anything approximating correctness, the actual dollars and cents value of either of these two groups of assets. But it is my opinion that their relative values are the organized knowledge of the Ford organization, 75%, the value of cash and physical assets of every nature, including raw and finished material, 25%. This author is of the opinion that this statement was not compiled by the young man whose name was signed to it without the assistance of some very analytical and experienced mind or minds. Unquestionably, the biggest asset that Henry Ford has is his own brain. Next to this would come the brains of his immediate circle of associates, for it has been through coordination of these that the physical assets which he controls were accumulated. Destroy every plant the Ford Motor Company owns, every piece of machinery, every atom of raw or finished material, every finished automobile and every dollar on deposit in any bank, and Ford would still be the most powerful man economically on earth. The brains which have built the Ford business could duplicate it again in short order. Capital is always available in unlimited quantities to brains such as Ford. Ford is the most powerful man on earth economically because he has the keenest and most practical conception of the principle of organized knowledge of any man on earth, as far as this author has the means of knowing. Despite Ford's great power and financial success, it may be that he has blundered often in the application of the principles through which he accumulated his power. There is but little doubt that Ford's method of mind coordination have often been crude. They must needs have been in the earlier days of this experience, before he gained the wisdom of application that would naturally go with any maturity of years. Neither can there be much doubt that Ford's application of the principle of mind chemistry was at least at the start the result of a chance alliance with other minds, particularly the mind of Edison. It is more than probable that Mr. Ford's remarkable insight into the laws of nature was first begun as the result of his friendly reliance with his own wife long before he ever met Mr. Edison or Mr. Firestone. Many a man who never knew the real source of his success is made by his wife through application of the mastermind principle. Mrs. Ford is a most remarkably intelligent woman, and this author has reason to believe that it was her mind blended with Mr. Ford's which gave him his first real start towards power. It may be mentioned, without any way depriving Ford of any honor or glory, that in his earlier days of experience, he had to combat the powerful enemies of illiteracy and ignorance to the greater extent than did either Edison or Firestone. Both of him were gifted by natural heredity with a most fortunate aptitude for acquiring and applying knowledge. Ford had to hew his talent out of the rough, raw timbers of his hereditary estate. Within an inconceivably short period of time, Ford has mastered three of the most stubborn enemies of mankind and transformed them into assets constituting the very foundation of his success. These enemies are ignorance, illiteracy, and poverty. Any man who can stay the hand of these three savage forces, much less harness and use them to good account, is well worth close study by the less fortunate individuals. This is an age of industrial power in which we are living. The source of all this power is organized effort. Not only has the management of industrial enterprises efficiently organized individual workers, but in many instances, mergers of industries have been effected in such a manner and to the end that these combinations, as in the case of United States Steel Corporation, for example, have accumulated practically unlimited power. One may hardly glance at the news of a day's events without seeing a report of some business, industrial or financial merger, bringing under one management enormous resources and thus creating great power. One day it is a group of banks. Another day it is a chain of railroads. The next day it is a combination of steel plants, all merging for the purpose of developing power through highly organized and coordinated effort. Knowledge, general in nature and unorganized, is not power. It is only potential power, the material of which real power may be developed. Any modern library contains an unorganized record of all the knowledge of value to which the present stage of civilization is heir. But this knowledge is not power because it is not organized. Every form of energy and every species of animal or plant life to survive must be organized. The oversized animals whose bones have filled nature's boneyard through extinction have left mute but certain evidence that non-organization means annihilation. From the electron, the smallest particle of matter, to the largest star in the universe, these and every material thing in between these two extremes offer proof positive that one of nature's first laws is that of organization. Fortunate is the individual who recognizes the importance of this law and makes it his business to familiarize himself with the various ways in which the law may be applied to advantage. The astute businessman has not only recognized the importance of the law of organized effort, but he has made this law the warp and the woof of his power. Without any knowledge whatsoever of the principle of mind chemistry, or that such a principle even exists, many men have accumulated great power by merely organizing the knowledge they possessed. The majority of all who have discovered the principle of mind chemistry and developed that principle into a mastermind have stumbled upon this knowledge by the merest of accident, often failing to recognize the real nature of their discovery or to understand the source of their power. This author is of the opinion that all living persons who at the present time are consciously making use of the principle of mind chemistry in developing power through the blending of minds may be counted on the fingers of two hands, which perhaps several fingers left to spare. If this estimate is even approximately true, the student will readily see that there is but slight danger of the field of mind chemistry practice becoming overcrowded. It is a well-known fact that one of the most difficult tasks that any business person must perform is that of inducing those who are associated with him to coordinate their efforts in a spirit of harmony. To induce continuous cooperation between a group of workers in any undertaking is next to impossible. Only the most efficient leaders can accomplish this highly desired object, but once in a great while, such a leader will rise above the horizon in the field of industry, business, or finance. And then the world hears of a Henry Ford, Thomas Edison, John Rockefeller Sr., E. Harriman, or James J. Hill. Power and success are practically synonymous terms. One grows out of the other. Therefore, any person who has the knowledge and the ability to develop power through the principle of harmonious coordination of efforts between individual minds, or in any other manner, may be successful in any reasoning undertaking that is possible of successful termination. It must not be assumed that a master mind will immediately spring, mushroom fashion, out of every group of minds which makes pretense of coordination in the spirit of harmony. Harmony, in the real sense of meaning of the word, is as rare among groups of people as is genuine Christianity among those who proclaim themselves Christians. Harmony is the nucleus around which the state of mind, known as mastermind, must be developed. Without this element of harmony, there can be no mastermind, a truth which cannot be repeated too often. Woodrow Wilson had in mind the development of a mastermind to be composed of groups of minds representing the civilized nations of the world, in his proposal for establishing the League of Nations. Wilson's conception was the most far-reaching humanitarian idea ever created in the mind of man, because it dealt with a principle which embraces sufficient power to establish a real brotherhood of man on earth. The League of Nations, or some similar blending of international minds in a spirit of harmony, is sure to become a reality. The time when such unity of minds will take place will be measured largely by the time required for the great universities and non-sectarian institutions of learning to supplant ignorance and superstition with understanding and wisdom. This time is rapidly approaching. The psychology of the revival meaning. The old religious orgy known as the revival offers a favorable opportunity to study the principle of mind chemistry known as mastermind. It will be observed that music plays no small part in bringing about the harmony essential to the blending of a group of minds in a revival meeting. Without music, the revival meeting would be a tame affair. During revival services, the leader of the meeting has no difficulty in creating harmony in the minds of his devotees. But it is a well-known fact that this state of harmony lasts no longer than the presence of the leader, after which the mastermind has always temporarily created, disintegrates. By arousing the emotional nature of the followers, the revivalist has no difficulty, under the proper stage setting and with the embellishment of the right sort of music, in creating a mastermind which becomes noticeable to all who come in contact with it. The very air becomes charged with a positive, pleasing influence which changes the entire chemistry of all minds present. The revivalist calls this energy the Spirit of the Lord. This author, through experiments conducted with a group of scientific investigators and laymen who were unaware of the nature of the experiment, has created the same state of mind and the same positive atmosphere without calling it the Spirit of the Lord. On many occasions, this author has witnessed the creation of the same positive atmosphere in a group of men and women engaged in the business of salesmanship without calling it the Spirit of the Lord. The author helped conduct a school of salesmanship for Harrison Parker, founder of the Cooperative Society of Chicago. and by the use of the same principle of mind chemistry, which the revivalist calls the Spirit of the Lord, so transformed the nature of a group of 3,000 men and women, all of whom were without former sales experience, that they sold more than $10 million worth of securities in less than 9 months, and earned more than $1 million for themselves. It was found that the average person who joined this school would reach the zenith of his or own selling power within 1 week, after which it was necessary to revitalize the individual's brain through a group sales meeting. These sales meetings were conducted on very much the same order as are the modern revival meetings of the religionist, with much the same stage equipment, including music and high-powered speakers, who exhorted the salespeople in very much the same manner as does the modern religious revivalist. Call it religion, psychology, mind chemistry, or anything you please. They are all based upon the same principle. But there is nothing more certain than the fact that wherever a group of minds are brought into contact, in a spirit of perfect harmony, each mind in the group becomes immediately supplanted and reinforced with a noticeable energy called a mastermind. For all this writer professes to know, this uncharted energy may be the Spirit of the Lord, but it operates just as favorably when called by any other name. The human brain and nervous system constitute a piece of intricate machinery which but few, if any, understand. When controlled and properly directed, this piece of machinery can be made to perform wonders of achievement, and if not controlled, it will perform wonders fantastic and phantom-like in nature, as may be seen by examining the inmates of an insane asylum. The human brain has different connection with a continuous influx of energy from which man derives his power to think. The brain receives this energy, mixes it with the energy created by the food taken in the body, and distributes it to every portion of the body. Through the aid of the blood and the nervous system, it thus becomes what we call life. From what source this outside energy comes, no one seems to know. All we know about it is that we must have it or die. It seems reasonable to suppose that this energy is none other than that which we call ether, and that it flows into the body along with the oxygen from the air as we breathe. Every normal human body possesses a first-class chemical laboratory and a stock of chemicals sufficient to carry on the business of breaking up, assimilating, and properly mixing and compounding the food we take into the body, preparatory to distributing it to wherever it is needed as a bodybuilder. Ample tests have been made, both with man and beast, to prove that the energy known as the mind plays an important part in this chemical operation of compounding and transforming food into the required substances to build and keep the body in repair. It is known that worry, excitement, or fear will interfere with the digestive process, and in extreme cases stop this process altogether, resulting in illness or death. It is obvious, then, that the mind enters into the chemistry of food digestion and distribution. It is believed by many eminent authorities, although it may never have been scientifically proved, that the energy known as mind or thought may become contaminated with negative or unsociable units to such an extent that the whole nervous system is thrown out of the working order. Digestion is interfered with, and various and sundry forms of disease will manifest themselves. Financial difficulties and unrequited love affairs head the list of causes of such mind disturbances. A negative environment such as that existing where some members of the family is constantly nagging will interfere with the chemistry of the mind to such an extent that the individual lose ambition and gradually sink into oblivion. It is because of this fact that the old saying that a man's wife may either make or break him is literally true. In a subsequent lesson, a whole chapter on this subject is addressed to the wives of men. Any high school student knows that certain food combinations will, if taken into the stomach, result in indigestion, violent pain, and even death. Good health depends, in part at least, upon a food combination that harmonizes. But harmony of food combinations is not sufficient to ensure good health. There must be harmony also between the units of energy known as the mind. Harmony seems to be one of nature's laws, without which there can be no such thing as organized energy, or life in any form whatsoever. The health of the body as well as the mind is literally built around, out of, and upon the principle of harmony. The energy known as life begins to disintegrate, and death approaches when the organs of the body stop working in harmony. The moment harmony ceases at the source of any form of organized energy, the units of that energy are thrown into a chaotic state of disorder, and the harmony is rendered neutral or passive. Harmony is also the nucleus around which the principle of mind chemistry, known as a mastermind, develops power. Destroy this harmony, and you destroy the power growing out of the coordinated effort of a group of individual minds. This truth has been stated, restated, and presented in every manner which the author could conceive, with the unending repetition, for the reason that unless the student grasps this principle and learns to apply it, this lesson is useless. Success in life, no matter what one may call success, is very largely a matter of adaptation to environment in such a manner that there is harmony between the individual and his environment. The palace of a king becomes as a hovel of a peasant if harmony does not abound within the walls. Conversely stated, the hut of a peasant may be made to yield more happiness than that of a mansion of the rich man, if harmony obtains in the former and not in the latter. Without perfect harmony, the science of astronomy would be as useless as the bones of a saint, because the stars and planets would clash with one another, and all would be in a state of chaos and disorder. Without the law of harmony, an acorn might grow into a heterogeneous tree consisting of the wood of the oak, poplar, maple, and whatnot. Without the law of harmony, the blood might deposit the food which grows fingernails on the scalp where hair is supposed to grow, and thus create a horny growth which might easily be mistaken by the superstitious to signify man's relation to a certain imaginary gentleman with horns, often referred to by the more primitive type. Without the law of harmony, there can be no organization of knowledge, for what, may one ask, is organized knowledge except the harmony of facts and truth and natural laws? The moment discord begins to creep in at the front door, harmony edges out the back door. So to speak, whether the application is made to a business partnership or the orderly movement of the planets of the heavens. If the student gathers the impression that the author is laying undue stress upon the importance of harmony, let it be remembered that lack of harmony is the first and often the last and only cause of failure. There can be no poetry, nor music, nor oratory worthy of notice without the presence of harmony. Good architecture is largely a matter of harmony. Without harmony, a house is nothing but a mass of building material, more or less a monstrosity. Sound business management plants the very sinews of its existence in harmony. Every well-dressed man or woman is a living picture and a moving example of harmony. With all these workaday illustrations of the important part which harmony plays in the affairs of the world, nay, in the operation of the entire universe, how could any intelligent person leave harmony out of his definite aim in life? As well have no definite aim as to omit harmony as the chief stone of its foundation. The human body is a complex organization of organs, glands, blood vessels, nerves, brain cells, muscles, etc. The mind energy which stimulates to action and coordinates the efforts of the component parts of the body is also a plurality of ever-varying and changing energies. From birth until death, there is a continuous struggle, often assuming the nature of open combat between the forces of the mind. For example, the lifelong struggle between the motivating forces and desires of the human mind, which takes place between the impulses of right and wrong, is well known to everyone. Every human being possesses at least two distinct mind powers or personalities, and as many as six distinct personalities, having been discovered in one person. One of man's most delicate tasks is that of harmonizing these mind forces so that they may be organized and directed toward the orderly attainment of any given object. Without this element of harmony, no individual can become an accurate thinker. It is no wonder that leaders in business and industrial enterprises, as well as those in politics and other fields of endeavor, find it so difficult to organize groups of people so they will function in the attainment of any given objective without friction. Each individual human possesses forces within himself which are hard to harmonize, even when he is placed in the environment most favorable to harmony. If the chemistry of the individual's mind is such that the units of his mind cannot be easily harmonized, think how much more difficult it must be to harmonize a group of minds so they will function as one, in an orderly manner, through what is known as a mastermind. The leader who successfully develops and directs the energy of a mastermind must possess tact, patience, persistence, self-confidence, intimate knowledge of a mind chemistry, and the ability to adapt himself in a state of perfect poise and harmony to quickly changing circumstances without showing the least sign of annoyance. How many are there who can measure up to this requirement? The successful leader must possess the ability to change the color of his mind, chameleon-like, to fit every circumstance that arises in connection with the object of his leadership. Moreover, he must possess the ability to change from one mood to another without showing the slightest signs of anger or lack of self-control. The successful leader must understand the 15 laws of success and be able to put into practice any combination of these 15 laws whenever occasions demand. Without this ability, no leader can be powerful, and without power, no leader can long endure. The meaning of education. There has long been a general misconception of the meaning of the word educate. The dictionaries have not aided in the elimination of this misunderstanding, because they have defined the word educate as an act of imparting knowledge. The word educate has its roots in the Latin word educo, which means to develop from within, to educe, to draw out, to grow through the law of use. Nature hates idleness in all its forms. She gives continuous life only to those elements which are in use. Tie up an arm or any other portion of the body, taking it out of use, and the idle part will soon atrophy and become lifeless. Reverse the order. Give an arm more than normal use, such as that engaged in by the blacksmith who wields a heavy hammer all day. Long, and that arm, developed from within, grows strong. Power grows out of organized knowledge, but mind you, it grows out of it through application and use. A man may become a walking encyclopedia of knowledge without possessing any power of value. This knowledge becomes power only to the extent that it is organized, classified, and put into action. Some of the best educated men the world has known possessed much less general knowledge than some who have been known as fools. The difference between the two being that the former put what knowledge they possessed into use, while the latter made no such application. An educated person is one who knows how to acquire everything he needs in the attainment of his main purpose in life, without violating the laws and rights of his fellow man. It might be a surprise to many so-called men of learning to know that they come nowhere near qualification as men of education. It might also be a great surprise to many who believe they suffer from lack of learning to know that they are well educated. The successful lawyer is not necessarily the one who memorizes the greatest number of principles of law. On the contrary, the successful lawyer is the one who knows where to find a principle of law, plus a variety of opinions supporting that principle which fit the immediate needs of a given case. In other words, the successful lawyer is he who knows where to find the law he wants when he needs it. This principle applies with equal force to the affairs of industry and business. Henry Ford had but little elementary schooling, yet he is one of the best educated men in the world because he has acquired the ability so to combine natural and economic laws, to say nothing of the minds of men, that he has the power to get anything of a material nature he wants. Some years ago, during the World War, Mr. Ford brought suit against the Chicago Tribune, charging the newspaper with libelous publication of statements concerning him, one of which was a statement that Ford was an ignoramus, an ignorant pacifist, etc. When the suit came up for trial, the attorneys for this Tribune undertook to prove, by Ford himself, that their statement was true, that he was ignorant, and that with this object in view, they catechized and cross-examined him on all manners of subject. One question they asked was, how many soldiers did the British send over to subdue the rebellion in the colonies in 1776? With a dry grin on his face, Ford nonchalantly replied, I do not know just how many, but I have heard that it was a lot more than ever went back. Loud laughter from court, jury, courtroom spectators, and even from the frustrated lawyer who had asked the question. The line of interrogation was continued for an hour or more, Ford keeping perfectly calm the meanwhile. Finally, however, he had permitted the smart-aleck lawyers to play with him until he was tired of it, and in reply to a question which was particularly obnoxious and insulting, Ford straightened himself up, pointed his finger at the questioning lawyer, and replied, If I should really wish to answer the foolish question you have just asked, or any of the others you have been asking, let me remind you that I have a row of electric push buttons hanging over my desk, and by placing my finger on the right button, I could call in men who could give me the correct answer to all the questions you have asked, and to many that you have not the intelligence either to ask or to answer. Now will you kindly tell me why I should bother about filling my mind with a lot of useless details in order to answer every fool question that anyone may ask, when I have able men all about me who can supply me with all the facts I want when I call for them? This answer is quoted from memory, but it substantially relates Ford's answer. There was silence in the courtroom. The questioning attorney's underjaw dropped down. His eyes opened widely. The judge leaned forward from the bench and gazed in Mr. Ford's direction. Many of the jury awoke and looked around as if they had heard an explosion, which they actually had. A prominent clergyman who was present in the courtroom at the time said later that the scene reminded him of that which must have existed when Jesus Christ was on trial before Pontius Pilate, just after he had given his famous reply to the Pilate's question, "What is truth?" In the vernacular of the day, Ford's reply knocked the questioner cold. Up to the time of that reply, the lawyer had been enjoying considerable fun at what he believed to be Ford's expense. By adroitly displaying his, the lawyer's, sample case of general knowledge, and comparing it with that which he inferred to be Ford's ignorance as to many events and subjects. But that answer spoiled the lawyer's fun. It also proved once more, to all who had the intelligence to accept the proof, that true education means mind development, not merely the gathering and classifying of knowledge. Ford could not, in all probability, have named the capitals of all the states of the United States, but he could have, and in fact had gathered the capital with which to turn many wheels within every state in the Union. Education, let us not forget, this consists of the power with which to get everything one needs when he needs it, without violating the rights of his fellow men. Ford comes well within that definition, and for that reason which the author has here tried to make plain by relating the foregoing incident connected with a simple Ford philosophy. There are many men of learning who could easily entangle Ford, theoretically, with a maze of questions none of which he personally could answer. But Ford could turn right around and wage a battle in industry or finance that would exterminate those same men with all of their knowledge and all of their wisdom. Ford could not go into his chemical laboratory and separate water into its component atoms of hydrogen and oxygen, and then recombine those atoms in their former order. But he knows how to surround himself with chemists who can do this for him if he wants it done. The man who can intelligently use the knowledge possessed by another is as much or more a man of education as the person who merely has the knowledge but does not know what to do with it. The president of a well-known college inherited a large tract of very poor land. This land had no timber or commercial value, no minerals or other valuable appurtenances. Therefore, it was nothing but a source of expense to him, but he had to pay taxes on it. The state built a highway through the land. An uneducated man who was driving his automobile over this road observed that this poor land was on top of a mountain, which commanded a wonderful view for many miles in all direction. He, the ignorant one, also observed that the land was covered with a growth of small pines and other saplings. He bought 50 acres of the land for $10 an acre. Near the public highway, he built a unique log house to which he attached a large dining room. Near the house, he put in a gasoline filling station. He built a dozen single-room log houses along the road, those he rented out to tourists at $3 a night each. The dining room, gasoline filling station, and log houses brought him a net income of $15,000 the first year. The next year, he extended his plans by adding 50 more log houses of 3 rooms each, which he now rents out as summer country homes to people in nearby city, at a rental of $150 each for the season. The building material cost him nothing, for it grew on his land in abundance, the same land which the college professor believed to be worthless. Moreover, the unique and unusual appearance of the log bungalows served as an advertisement of the plan, whereas many would have considered it a real calamity had they been compelled to build out of such crude materials. Less than 5 miles from the location of these log houses, this same man purchased an old worked-out farm of 150 acres for $25 an acre, a price which the seller believed to be extremely high. By building the dam 100 feet in length, the purchaser of this old farm turned a stream of water into a lake that covered 15 acres of that land, stocked the lake with fish, then sold the farm off in building lots to people who wanted summering places around the lake. The total profit realized from this simple transaction was more than $25,000, and the time required for its consummation was just 1 summer. Yet this man of vision and imagination was not educated in the orthodox meaning of that term. Let us keep in mind the fact that it is through these simple illustrations of the use of organized knowledge that one may become educated and powerful. In speaking of the transaction here related, the college president who sold 50 acres of worthless land for $500 said, "Just think of it, that man, who most of us might call ignorant, mixed his ignorance with 50 acres of worthless land and made the combination yield more yearly than I earn from 5 years of application of so-called education." There is an opportunity, if not scores of them, in every state in America to make use of the idea here described. From now on, make it your business to study the lay of all land you see that is similar to that described in this lesson, and you may find a suitable place for developing a similar money-making enterprise. The idea is particularly adaptable in localities where bathing beaches are few, as people naturally like such conveniences. The automobile has caused a great system of public highways to be built throughout the United States. On practically every one of these highways, there is a suitable spot for a cabin city for tourists, which can be turned into a regular money-making mint by the man with the imagination and self-confidence to do it. There are opportunities to make money all around you. This course was designed to help you see these opportunities and to inform you how to make the most of them after you discover them. Who can profit most by the law of success philosophy? Railroad officials who want a better spirit of cooperation between their trainmen and the public they serve. Salaried people who wish to increase their earning power and market their services to better advantage. Salespeople who wish to become masters in their chosen field. The law of success philosophy covers every known law of selling and includes many features not included in any other course. Industrial plant managers who understand the value of greater harmony among their employees. Railroad employees who wish to establish records of efficiency which will lead to more responsible positions with greater pay. Merchants who wish to extend their business by adding new customers. The law of success philosophy will help any merchant increase his business by teaching him how to make a walking advertisement of every customer who comes into a store. automobile agents who wish to increase the selling power of their salesmen. A large part of the Law of Success course was developed from the life, work, and experience of the greatest automobile salesman living, and it is therefore of unusual help to the sales manager who is directing the efforts of automobile salesmen. Life insurance agents who wish to add new policyholders and increase the insurance on present policyholders. One life insurance salesman in Ohio sold a $50,000 policy to one of the officials of the Central Steel Company. As the result of but one reading of the lesson on profiting by failures, this same salesman has become one of the star men of the New York Life Insurance Company's staff, as the result of his training in the 15 Laws of Success. School teachers who wish to advance to the top in their present occupation, or who are looking for an opportunity to enter the more profitable field of business as a life work. Students, both college and high school, who are undecided as to what field of endeavor they wish to enter as life work. The Law of Success course covers a complete personal analysis service which helps the student of the philosophy to determine the work for which he or she is best fitted. Bankers who wish to extend their business through better and more courteous methods of servicing their clients. Bank clerks who are ambitious to prepare themselves for executive positions in the field of banking or in some commercial or industrial field. Physicians and dentists who wish to extend their practice without violating the ethics of their profession by direct advertising. A prominent physician has said that the Law of Success course is worth thousands of dollars to any professional man or woman whose professional ethics prevent direct advertising. Promoters who wish to develop new and hitherto unworked combinations in business or industry. The principle described in this introductory lesson is said to have made a small fortune for a man who used it as the basis of a real estate promotion. Real estate men who wish new methods for promoting sales. This introductory lesson contains a description of an entirely new real estate promotion plan, which is sure to make fortunes for many who will put it to use. This plan may be put into operation into practically every state. Moreover, it may be employed by men who never promoted an enterprise. Farmers who wish to discover new methods of marketing their products so as to give them greater net returns, and those who own land suitable for subdivision promotion under the plan referred to at the end of this introductory lesson. Thousands of farmers have gold mines in the land they own which is not suitable for cultivation, which could be used for recreation and resort purposes on a highly profitable basis. Stenographers and bookkeepers who are looking for a practical plan to promote themselves into higher and better paying positions. The Law of Success course is said to be the best course ever written on the subject of marketing personal services. Printers who want a larger volume of business and more efficient production as the result of better cooperation among their own employees. Day laborers who have the ambition to advance into more responsible positions, in work that has greater responsibilities and consequently offers more and better pay. Lawyers who wish to extend their clientele through dignified ethical methods which will bring them to the attention in a favorable way of a greater number of people who need legal services. Business executives who wish to expand their present business or who wish to handle their present volume with less expense as a result of greater cooperation between their employees. Laundry owners who wish to extend their business by teaching their drivers how to serve more courteously and efficiently. Life insurance general agents who wish bigger and more efficient sales organizations. Chain store managers who want a greater volume of business as a result of more efficient individual sales efforts. Married people who are unhappy and therefore unsuccessful because of lack of harmony and cooperation in the home. To all described in the foregoing classification, the Law of Success philosophy offers both definite and speedy aid. Summary of Introductory Lesson. The purpose of this summary is to aid the student in mastering the central idea around which the lesson has been developed. This idea is represented by the term mastermind, which has been described in great detail throughout this lesson. All new ideas, and especially those of an abstract nature, find lodgment in the human mind only after much repetition. A well-known truth which accounts for the restatement in this summary of the principle known as the mastermind. A mastermind may be developed by a friendly alliance in the spirit of harmony of purpose between two or more minds. This is an appropriate place at which to explain that out of every alliance of minds, whether in a spirit of harmony or not, there is developed another mind which affects all participating in the alliance. No two or more minds ever met without creating, out of the contact, another mind, but not always in this invisible creation, a mastermind.